Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Thursday, October the 9th, 2025, 10-9-25, 13 and a half minutes past the hour here on WGH Talk, and this is going to be an hour that no fan of television will want to miss. We are joined by Lucille Balls, the legendary I Love Lucy star. Here's Lucy, the Lucy Show, Life with Lucy star, the queen of television. Lucille Ball's number one fan, Michael Stern, who has written a book, I Had a Ball, a recounting of his time, life and times, with the legendary TV star. And we are so glad this morning to be joined by Lucille Ball's number one fan, Michael Stern. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing good. You actually read that exactly the way I wrote it.
I'm glad to hear it.
It was good. It was really good. Thank you for having me on, and well, sorry about the burp yesterday, you know, but I'm here today, so
well,
I do apologize.
Live radio and television, you just got to play it by ear, but I'm glad we have you on today. Now, to start off the program, a guest that I had on the show several times was Wanda Clark. Now, Wanda Clark was Lucille Ball's secretary for many, many years, a close confidant, a friend. She was always just a treasure trove of information about the late television star. She died in the last week, we were sad to learn, at the age of 87. You had a long relationship with Wanda. Talk a little bit about the late Wanda Clark.
Wanda Clark was one of my second moms. And I hope I don't get emotional right away, but we talked on the phone at least once a week for the last 50 years. I mean, I was talking to her when I was 13, 14 years old, and she was just the sweetest person. You know, when I used to call the Lucille Ball office, you know, at first I thought it was like 20, 30 people working in the office. You know, I never knew. But no, she handled that office all by herself. And she worked for Lucy. She worked for Gary Martin. She worked for, you know, just the Lucille Ball family, you know, Lucy Arnaz, Desi Arnaz Jr., whatever needed to be done. But she was more than just a secretary. She was a friend of theirs. I mean, she started off as a secretary, and she was a secretary, but she was more of a dear friend of theirs. And Lucy used to give her, you know, the shoes and the clothing. You know, after Lucy wore it, Wanda would wear it. And eventually, Wanda would actually dye her hair red, I guess in honor of Lucy. It looked good on Wanda, it looked good on Lucy, so why not, you know? But she was just a sweet lady. We would travel throughout the country to see, like, Lucy Arnaz perform or Desi Jr. We went to Las Vegas together. We went to Denver together. We went to New York together. We were like mother son, you know, and if you knew her, you would love her. And the world lost a true sweet lady this week. Just nothing I could say. Just what an honor it was to know her. And I think somebody once said, it's better to know somebody than have never met that person ever in their lives or something. But that was her. You were better off knowing her.
You know, years ago, I remember, and Wanda was on a few times, but one day we did a couple of shows back-to-back, and we had Wanda on, whose bill was always Lucille Ball's secretary, and then we had her driver, her chauffeur on.
So Frank Gorey.
Yeah, who has also passed away now.
Yeah.
And it was always interesting because when you would introduce these people, you would hear secretary or chauffeur, and you would think, well, these were people who were employed by Lucy, and yes, they were, but they knew her life. They were friends of hers. She treated them really like family, which I always thought said a lot about Lucy herself.
Yes, and also besides Frank and Lucy, Lucy, once you were in her circle, you were in her circle for life. And there was one gentleman named Cam McCullen, I think that was his name. He was a sound man, started on radio with Lucy, then went to I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show, Here's Lucy, and Life with Lucy. But when he was on Life with Lucy and he was a sound man, he was hard of hearing. But Lucy still hired Cam. I mean, that's how dedicated she was. A sound man who was hard of hearing.
That's an interesting story. With Wanda Clark's passing, is this the end of that era of people who were contemporaries of Lucy, who worked that closely with her, who were in her inner circle in that way back in the 60s and 70s?
And 50s. It really is. No, there's actually another lady named Teresa who is still with us. She was also like Gary Morton's secretary for a long time in the 60s, and then when it went to Lucille Ball Productions, her job was phased out, but she's still with us. So she worked for the Desilu Studios as well. And she came back for Life with Lucy. She did come back for Life with Lucy.
Had Wanda been ill?
Only I saw her 1 year ago because she now lived in Oklahoma, and I drove down. I'm working on a show in Texas, and I actually drove down to see her last October 11th. So it was almost a year ago this week that I saw her, and she was using a cane. But then I heard on September 22nd of this year, her legs just gave out. She couldn't walk. They took her by ambulance to Tulsa, and she went for a lot of tests. And then, so really, she was only out of it for about 10 days, which is a blessing. I talked to her maybe 2 days before she passed away, 3 days. She had surgery on Friday or Saturday, and she was a little out of it, and it's the first time I ever heard her being, like, out of it, but she said, Michael, I need to cancel with you and Rhonda. We were going to go visit her, but I need to cancel for this week, and we'll do it again in a couple weeks. So even though she was out of it, she knew what was going on. Like, she knew her calendar.
So that, it's good to hear that right up until the end that she was still able to have conversations and do all of that. So we'll remember her well. Now, Michael, one thing that's interesting, when I introduce you as Lucille Ball's number one fan, a lot of people think, well, now, how close can a fan be? You have a very interesting story. How did you meet Lucy, and what was the evolution of that relationship?
Well, I'll start from the beginning. I went to, first of all, I was a big fan because I saw her in the movie Yours, Mine, and Ours. And that was with Lucy and Henry Fonda, Van Johnson. It was almost like the Brady Bunch. She had 8 kids, he had 10 kids, and they get married. And all 18 kids live under one house, one roof. And I saw it in a movie theater. I was like 7 years old. And I fell in love with that lady so fast. She made me laugh. I actually sat in the theater without running up and down the aisles at 7 years old. I was on something, maybe. Who knows? But I made my parents take me back to see it again within a week. Then, a few months later, I was watching I Love Lucy. And it was my aunt who said, you know, Michael, that's the same lady who's in Yours, Mine, and Ours. I had no idea. And I fell in love with I Love Lucy. We moved to Van Nuys, California, just a small suburb type, you know, dwellings and everything. And turns out that my neighbor's mother's boss worked on the Lucy show. So my neighbor's mother's boss. And they were able to get me tickets to see Here's Lucy. It was October 1971. Oh, my gosh, another anniversary week. And I didn't get to meet her, but I saw her. I remember the way she was introduced. She ran from one end of the studio to the other, and she ran up and down the stage. And it wasn't until the third time I went to go to Here's Lucy. I went to Lucille Ball's mother, who went to every filming, and I brought her my scrapbook of photos, and she said, "How would you like to meet Lucy after the show?" And on July 12th, 1973, 12 and a half years old, I got to meet Lucy. She was wonderful to me. She signed an autograph, looked through my scrapbook, and then she gave me a kiss, and then off I went. And I didn't realize it at the time, but my mom, who I went with, said, "No, Michael, you go by yourself to meet Lucy, because this is your moment to shine. You know, this is your moment with Lucy." She didn't want to get involved. She didn't want to participate. It wasn't about my mom. It was about me. And it took me years to realize how special that was. But then I happened to see Lucille Ball over and over again, and she finally took me to the side and said, "Look, Michael, you could be my number one fan, but you better get a job and, you know, stay in school." And I actually did get a job, and I stayed in school. And she actually came to the department store that I was working to make sure I was working. And she bought a lot of linens for me, and she said, "Do you play backgammon?" I said, "No." She said, "You'll learn. You'll come over to my house and we'll play." And from that moment on, I was about 16, I was at her house, 3 days a week. You know, with school and working, I always had time to go to play backgammon with Lucy, watch TV with her. I remember watching Wheel of Fortune with Lucy. "I'll take a C, I'll take a C," vacuum cleaner. I remember that. We always had a good time. And we never talked about what it was like with being with Lucy, with Ethel and Fred and Ricky. It was always about what was in the news of the day. So I always knew her as Lucille Ball, the person, and not Lucille Ball, the celebrity. And I never knew how big of a star she was at that time.
It's interesting, Michael, because obviously Lucy had a lot of fans, biggest star on television at that time. Certainly more people knew her than anybody else on television.
They said her face was seen by more people than even Queen Elizabeth.
Well, and it's interesting because, with all the fans that she must have had and all of the relationships that I'm sure were not intimate relationships, people coming over to her house to play games and watch television shows, why do you think she felt comfortable enough with you to do that?
I was harmless. I always knew the difference between Lucille Ball, the person, and Lucille Ball, the actress. And no one had to tell me that. And it was just an honest relationship. Just, I treated her as a person. I mean, I always knew she was Lucille Ball, but I always treated her as a person. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, we never talked about I Love Lucy. We always talked about what was in the world, and had real conversations. We did watch I Love Lucy together on her birthday. The local channel had an I Love Lucy marathon, and we were watching I Love Lucy back to back to back. And there were some episodes that we had no idea what episode it was until like the second scene or whatever. It's like, "Oh yeah, it's this show." And then there were some that the curtain opened and she knew exactly what episode it was. And there was one show that cut out a major scene. And she was furious with that. She wanted to call the station and complain that they cut out a funny scene. Like, why does Ethel walk out with toothpaste all over her face? It was when they were going cross country to Hollywood, and Ethel got toothpaste all over her face. And you didn't know why. And she was upset with that. She didn't laugh at herself, but she always laughed at, Ethel and, Fred and, Ricky. So she knew her episodes. She really did. And they were 35 years old at that time.
What was she like as a person? Obviously interested in what was going on in the world. What was she like just to be around? What was her personality like?
Not a funny person. She could do funny things, but she was just a very serious woman and, like, to the point. She reminds me of, like, Judge Judy. You know, it's like, it's either a yes or a no. You know, just what's the answer, you know? And, like, she didn't want to go, well, but, you know, it was just tell me the facts. And that's the type of lady she was. She was very stern. Oh, like my last name. She would not even answer the phone, like, hello, is that, yeah? You know, it was like, hi, is Lucy there? Yeah. No, I need to talk to Lucy. Yeah. And then I realized it was Lucy. That was early on. And, but that's the type of lady she was. She was not a funny, ha-ha type lady. She wasn't Joan Rivers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and she always, speaking of Joan Rivers, she always appreciated other comedians, female personalities. Whenever the new season of shows came on, she always wrote them, at that time, a telegram, you know, congratulations on your new show, wish you luck. You know, and she did that to, like, Roseanne Barr, you know, early on in her career, just to everybody. Candace Bergen, she always gave a nice little telegram to congratulate them to be on television.
You know, Michael, it's interesting. She had three successful television series, I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show, Here's Lucy. This is the 70s and 80s, the late 70s and 80s. What is her life like as far as work? She does some guest appearances. She did the movie Stone Pillow before the last series. We'll get to the last series in a second. But what were those experiences like? The guest appearances that she was doing at that point, being an older lady, and also the movie Stone Pillow in the early 80s.
Right. And I was able to go with her to a lot of these shows, like, you know, like the Merv Griffins and the Johnny Carson shows and Joan Rivers and the Bob Hope specials and the Milton Berle specials and even the Academy Awards. She was getting a standing ovation every time she came out and Dinah Shore. She was a legend. And that's when I saw her as Lucille Ball. And she could be an older lady backstage, but as soon as that, you know, this light hit her face, she was 20 years younger, and she was a star. And so she did a lot of reminiscing on those type shows, or she did a few skits with Bob Hope and everything, but that's all she was doing. You know, and she did a couple specials. Lucy Moves to NBC, Lucy Calls the President, which was one of my favorite shows, because it was the only time I actually got to meet Vivian Vance. And it was a reunion-type show because Gail Gordon was on it, Mary Jane Croft, Mary Wicks, Ed McMahon, you know, a lot of these people that worked with her for 30 years were all on this one special. And it was a very special. You know, I really enjoyed it. But she would get a standing ovation even when the cameras were rolling, and she would walk out a standing ovation.
Now she certainly had a departure in Stone Pillow in the early 80s. She played a homeless woman.
Right.
What did she like that? Was that something she enjoyed, wanted to do?
She wanted to break away from the Lucille Ball, Lucy mold. And so she did this movie in New York. I did not go to the New York filming at all. But I went to, like, the premieres out here and in L.A. And she wanted to try something different. But would the fans like her as something besides Lucy Ricardo? And the ratings were great. But she didn't want to be remembered as a back lady at the end of her career. That I do remember. But she did a wonderful job. I think you could still find it on, like, Amazon and everything. You could still download it. it's a good TV movie. And it was a TV movie, which she had not done in a gazillion years.
Well,
and go ahead.
And it's an interesting time because it's approaching the mid-80s. Lucy has not done a regular television series for a decade. People had certainly wanted her to do that. And in 1985, The Golden Girls comes on, becomes a huge hit, top 10 show, wins its time slot, and people start looking toward Lucille Ball. How does this all come about, this show Life with Lucy in 1986?
Well, it's funny because I was with her the night before it was announced, the night before at a cocktail party, and you would think she would have said, oh, I got a surprise, you know, I can't tell you or whatever. It's going to be announced tomorrow. No hint whatsoever. And then on Entertainment Tonight, it was announced that Lucille Ball was coming back to weekly television. It turned out there was talks about it, but she didn't know it was going to be announced the next day. She had no clue. And I had even asked Lucy writers were actually at this cocktail party. It was for the TV museum. And I said, do you think if Lucy ever came back to TV, would you be able to write another series? And they go, and they had no idea about Life with Lucy. They had no idea. And they said, yeah, we always have ideas about Lucy, what we could do. But what turned out was, Lucy, when Life with Lucy did start airing, she was on opposite herself. So would you rather watch a young Lucy or an older grandma Lucy who could get hurt? And that was one of the problems. And again, she did bring back the writers, and she did bring back Gail Gordon. And, you know, people are now going, well, what happens if she would have done more of a Golden Girls type comedy, like break away from Lucy Ricardo and do something different? Would that have worked? Maybe, perhaps. One of the last episodes filmed was with Jane Meadows, who was on The Honeymooners, and they play sisters. And that episode, that week of filming, was like, ah, we found our new Ethel Mertz, because they played off so well with each other. And if she had been there maybe from day one, things could have been different. But when Lucy was working, and then she was 75 years old, which is not old now, but... she was 20 years younger when she was working. She was doing things that I couldn't keep up with. And I was in my 20s at the time. It was like, I don't know how she could do it. But I loved, it was the first time I was really with her almost on a daily basis, watching her rehearse. And she would do a scene 30 times just to get it right, to look like she's never done it before. And she's the one who taught me with acting. It's like, in rehearsals, ask for the actual prop. Like, say if it says I'm going to be lifting up a pencil, do not give me a pen during rehearsals and a pencil during the actual filming. Give me an actual pencil, so she knew the weight of the pencil or the mug or whatever it is, the telephone, whatever it is. She wanted the actual props that was going to be used. She taught me that.
You know, this series is very interesting because it's become part of television lore in a way. She had 18 years of successful television series, and they were all at CBS. That's why people wanted her back. They didn't think she could do anything wrong. She was considered the queen of television by the mid 80s, and this show is coming about. So, kind of take us through. Okay, the show is announced. She's going to do it. What is the build up like?
She was getting bad reviews before we even shot a foot of film. That's how the media was. They were so cruel to her. And some of the articles which we hid, but she found, was like that she should be dead. Why is Lucille Ball coming back to TV? She's too old. You know, they were knocking her down, which is sad because she says she could take comments from about the show, good, bad, whatever. But why were they knocking her? And that's what hurt her the most. It's like, well, that's what killed her almost, you know, just, it was sad. It was, they were beating her up before they were filming it.
Was there a lot of excitement prior to the show? She seemed to bring back, you know, obviously a lot of the same writers. Gail Gordon was there again for the third round, television series-wise. Was there a lot of excitement and a lot of thought going into this last series? Because when the season started, it was a big deal. Lucy was coming back. It's going to be a big thing. Was there a lot of excitement before the show premiered?
Oh, my gosh. Because I worked in the audience department, the company that had the show, it was called Audiences Unlimited. They had enough ticket requests for the entire 22-episode run. They didn't film that many, but once they announced Lucy was coming back to TV, everybody wanted a ticket for that show. So the fans wanted her to be successful. So that was a good, that felt good for Lucy and everything, that people wanted to see her. They really did. And I remember the very first, and I'll skip around, but the very first scene that she filmed, she comes down the stairs, and usually she would have, in her past shows, she would actually come up before the show started, maybe answer a question or two, like almost like a Kill Burnett, and then go into the scene. Here, she actually came, the first time the audience saw her was when she entered the stage, and I remember the very first scene, the applause, the standing ovation lasted, it seemed forever. And there was a couple on the set, they were like a husband and wife kissing. And they said, we were kissing for like 5 minutes. It's like, I only met this person, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And here we are, you know, doing a kissing scene. And Lucy's standing ovation just lasted forever. And it was very nice. It was wonderful. She felt good. It was a happy set. It was a very happy set.
Watching the show, Michael, did you think that this is a good show?
At the time, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking back, there was some problems. Yeah, there were some problems. And like I said, too bad it wasn't like a Golden Girls type comedy, or too bad she didn't have like an Ethel with her or something to that nature. But yeah, the writing was a little dated. It just wasn't the same.
With her, being a lady who had been in business, had run Desilu for a period of time, Star Trek, you know, things like that she was
Mission
running.
Mission Impossible. Manic.
Yeah, and there are legendary video of her on the set, legendary video on the set of her own shows telling people where to be, and this is going to be funny, and, you know, this lighting's not right. Did she understand that this show, that there was something wrong?
If so, she didn't say it to me. That I don't know. That I don't know, honestly. And I don't want to make up something. It didn't come across that way. But knowing, because I worked on a show for the last 20 years, her name was all over the stage, the studio. She owned the show, you know. So when she said, you know, the lighting is off or this is off, it was her show. People aren't going to remember the cameraman, but she's going to remember her lighting. She's going to remember, you know, where the camera was. She knows what she needed. And for the most part, she was right. She knew the lighting was off a little bit. So she was strong and strict that way. But she still wasn't, I never heard her being like a nasty person on the set. It's like, fix the light or whatever. Like, it needs to be fixed. That she was, you know, she knew what she wanted, and she got it. It was her show.
It was her show.
Her name was on the title.
Now, With Life with Lucy, the epilogue here is the show opened up pretty good ratings wise. Certainly not what the previous shows had done. And then
right. she wanted Monday nights. She really did. That was her time slot for 25 years or so. Monday nights, CBS. I know she was on ABC, but she wanted Monday nights, and she got Saturday night. And I saw Betty White. I said, Lucy's going to be on, Saturday night now after your show, but on a different network. And she said, just to be on the same night as Lucy, what an honor.
Yeah.
And that's when everybody stayed home to watch shows. Even like in 1986, everybody was watching it. There wasn't the VCRs at the time, and I don't think so.
So And the show does have a good opening rating, but after that, it's in the bottom of the ratings prime time. It's not doing well at all. They don't even do the full 22. That show ended, what was her feeling?
That I know, because I was with her the day she found out, and we all found out that the show was canceled. She found out after she filmed an episode. We found out later that night or early the next morning, and we all went down to the studio, and we actually had a little going away party. I don't know if you want to call it a party, in the offices of Bob and Madeline. And I remember Lucy talking to the two people who played her grandkids. She took them to the side and said, this is the beginning of your career. This is what I've heard over the years, because she did it privately, but just, be strong and don't worry about it. Just move on. You'll get work. You're adorable. You were wonderful. But she was strong to everybody in that room. When we were walking out, and I was with her. I was the one who was walking with her, and it was just the two of us, and she started sobbing. She finally was able to let it go, and it was sad. She said, I let 200 people down, and, it was just a really sad moment. It's like, oh, my gosh, how do I handle this? And she just cried, just cried. It was like she built television. She started television with Desi Arnaz in 1951. She created television almost. People bought TVs because of her and Milton Berle. But, she started it all. And here she was being fired, and she had never been fired in her life. And she says, nobody loves me anymore. Just nobody loves me. And she sort of disappeared for the next couple of years.
And I think that's an interesting point for people. This happens in late 1986. She lives until April of 89, and this is Golden Girls is still on. And at one point, before she died, the Golden Girls cast was being asked in a symposium who is the guest they would most like to have on, and it was Lucille Ball. Roseanne comes on at that time, and she's a big Lucy fan. But in that 3-year period from the time Life with Lucy is canceled until she dies, she doesn't do another role on any television series. She does a Bob Hope special. But why didn't she do a guest spot on Golden Girls or Roseanne or something, one of the big shows of the day? People had to have been asking.
I'm sure they were, I don't know, but I know that for the Golden Girls, the episodes that they wanted her to do were more dramatic. And even Lucy said, look, if they want me, people want to see me as funny. And these were not funny episodes. I think one of them, she was going to play a blind woman who I think it went to Polly Holiday in the Golden Girls episode. But she wanted to do something funny, and they didn't have a script for her.
So she was asked by Golden Girls.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And they couldn't find anything. But, like, she didn't do, like, a Love Boat or something. She didn't do any of those things.
Well, a lot of people thought she would turn up on Roseanne. I mean, that was about a year before she died, but people thought she might even turn up there.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
But it did not happen. It did not happen. It would have been wonderful. It would have been wonderful. She did a guest appearance, and I think it was before. It was way before Life with Lucy. It was a Danny Thomas sitcom, Make Room for Granddaddy, I think it was. She did a show called The Practice. It was called The Practice with Danny Thomas, and she played a different character, but funny, and she was wonderful in it. I think it was before. Way before Life with Lucy. She could do it. She could do it. And I know she did the Shirley MacLaine specials, and she did things like that. But the last 3 years, no, she really didn't do anything. Bob Hope forced her to do the Academy Awards. She did not want to do it. And he said, come on, Lucy, let's do it. You know, and she finally agreed. And she did the Academy Awards.
Well, it's very interesting because that three-year period, 86 to 89, you know, this is the time of the sitcom, not just Golden Girls, Cheers, Cosby Show, Night Court, Who's the Boss? They all were, Murphy Brown was on by that point. They all were right. Big hits, and I would have to imagine that Lucille Ball's name came up in some of these discussions around these shows, and yet she doesn't do anything. In your opinion, as somebody who's around her at that time, what happened to her? Even her old friend Bob Hope had trouble getting her to do things. What happened to her?
I think she honestly thought nobody liked her anymore. She stayed home, and she just didn't want to leave her house. She really thought she would be safer at home doing nothing, which is sad. I mean, here she was, the queen of comedy, and she honestly thought nobody liked her anymore.
You know, it's amazing to believe that could happen. 1989 comes. She's 79, certainly not elderly. 77. Certainly not elderly.
Right.
But out of the blue, when is the last time you spoke with her, and then what happened?
There's two times, I you know, and my memory has always been a little fuzzy on this, what I can remember. I was with her at the Academy Awards. I was a seat filler at that time, which is when a celebrity gets up to accept an award or has to go backstage to present an award. The first, like, 15 rows, they would always have something called a seat filler, and that's what I did. So 1 minute you could be sitting next to Sigourney Weaver or whoever, and the next minute you're in row two, you're in row one. And in those days there was security, but it wasn't as tight as, you know, for today. But Lucille Ball was doing the red carpet with Gary Morton, and Access, what show was it? One of the shows was supposed to ask questions about, they were doing a show about fans. And so she was supposed to talk about me, but she only went halfway through the red carpet. And then I met her because I couldn't go on to the red carpet. I met her at the door of the Shrine Auditorium, and she saw me and she gave me a hug and she said, I need to go to the restroom. And so with her hand on my hand, even though my credential wasn't getting me anywhere, having Lucille Ball arm in arm, I got to go everywhere. So we went backstage, we went to the green room, and we talked for about maybe 15 minutes. She said, you know my friend Jimmy Stewart, and it was pretty fun. I was meeting all these celebrities. Rob Lowe was backstage before he went on, and then she handed me her tickets to where she was going to sit in the actual show, which was the second row, and she said, Gary and I are not sitting. Take my seat, and which I did. So I sat in the second row the entire show, and so I didn't have to move around and everything. So that's really the last, and she gave me a hug. You know, she gave me a kiss, and she gave me a hug, and that's really the last time I saw her. However, I went to her house maybe a few days later, and she was sleeping on the couch. So I really did see her sleeping on the couch, but the last time we really talked was at the Academy Awards.
Now, this Academy Awards show is less than a month before she dies. If people go and look at the footage of this, you know, she gets a huge ovation when she walks out with Bob Hope. People want to see her. It's really the first time on a grand stage that people have seen her in about 3 years. There she is, and this happens. And then,
you know what?
Yeah.
And when I was sitting in the audience, the announcer, when the show started, you know, they said, like, live from the Shrine Auditorium, tonight you'll see, you know, like, Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks and Dustin Hoffman. And, you know, there's some, you know, a little applause. But when they even announced Lucille Ball's name, it got a thunderous applause. Inside the theater, when they just announced her name, which was, it was like, I was touched. It was like, yeah, they do love her. They do love her. Yeah. And then when she came out, it was one of the only standing ovations of the night, she and Bob Hope. And then she waves to me and she goes, "Hi, Mike," on TV. So it was an honor. So the last thing she said, she mouthed to me like, "Hi, Mike."
Well, and this is a big appearance. It gets a lot of press, a lot of pictures taken that day. She does it. And then something happens. Now, I talked about this with Wanda, and I also talked about it with her former chauffeur. What is your take on what happened less than a month later? Because it from my understanding, she gets sick one morning. They take her to the hospital. They think everything's going to be okay. They fix the problem.
Right.
Open heart surgery, I think.
And I did not see her.
Did not see her.
3 weeks.
And then she's set to be released. And the day she's set to be released, something awful happens. So take us through how you go through this.
She was being honored from the Kodak company or something. There was a luncheon being held, I think like 2 days, 3 days before she was going to be released. She was still in the hospital, so she couldn't make it. But like Carol Burnett was there, and Gary and Lucy Arnaz, and they kept saying to the press, you know, she's going to come home. We got balloons ready for her. She's going to come home. And she never did. Early morning, she had a rupture, aorta, a rupture, and she passed away almost immediately. Almost immediately.
For somebody who obviously loved her, had a relationship with her for this amount of time, how did you hear of this, and what was that like?
Two people called me within a matter of 2 minutes. Wanda Clark and my friend Barbara Auerkamp, who was also like my second mother. They both called me almost immediately. And actually Wanda said, "Can I give out your phone number if some of the press wants to talk to you? You know, as a fan or whatever." And I said yes. And I remember my sister-in-law came over to help me, and this was before call waiting and everything. We almost logged almost 200 phone calls of everyone calling me, people that I've not talked to in 20 years, to CBS and NBC and ABC, and they were all calling for statements and Entertainment Tonight. Entertainment Tonight was the third phone call I received that morning to do a story, because the producer who was going to do that story on Lucy talking about fans was also on Entertainment Tonight. And so she called me probably within 10 minutes and said, "Can we come over and do a story?" And they were over within an hour before 9 a.m. and they got their sound bites and they were out within 10 minutes. That I remember. But I couldn't mourn. I couldn't mourn until I was watching I Love Lucy that morning on TV, came in at 9 o'clock, and when it said right before the show started, it said like Lucille Ball, 1911, 1989, and that's when I lost it. It's like when it's in print and it shows the ending year, that's when it hit. It took about an hour and a half, and then I was devastated from then on.
Were you able to attend her service?
There was no funeral because Lucille Ball did not want a circus-type atmosphere. I remember talking to Fox News that they really, I mean, like that day or the next day, they wanted like camera coverage from the second the family left the house, driving down Sunset, you know, to the mortuary, you know, every step of the way. And I think Lucille Ball said, I wasn't going to do that. You know, just she knew what kind of circus it was going to be. That she knew. And so she was cremated. And from my understanding, I think it was Wanda, Frank, Lucy Arnaz, Desi Arnaz Jr., and Gary Morton. They went to the cemetery and they placed her on the in the wall, and that was it. That was it. They did have, because of the outpouring of love for Lucy at that time, Lucy Arnaz decided to have like a memorial like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, one in Santa Monica, one in New York, and one in Chicago, all at the same time. Out here was, out in L.A. was hosted by the Reverend Shuler, and I think Diane Sawyer did it in New York, and I can't remember who did Chicago. And they did it like on a Monday night at 8:30 in Santa Monica. There was probably about 3,000 people that showed up. And then afterwards, and I was not friends with Lucy Arnaz at that point, but she took me aside and said, after this, we're coming to my house, like Lucy's house. And there were about 15 people, 20 people, and they served like cookies and, you know, some drinks. And that's it. There was like 15, 20 people that mourned for Lucy, close friends.
Michael, with about a minute left here, what's the memory of Lucille Ball? How do you remember her, the person? You say you didn't so much know the actress, the character, the person.
Right. She was very motherly. If I had an issue with my parents, she would say, why are you telling me? You need to talk to your parents. So she got me closer to my parents. She got me closer to my parents. And she knew where her boundaries were. And she always said, never quit. Just don't quit. Get fired, but don't quit so you could collect unemployment. and so to this day, I don't quit. I do not quit.
Mm. It's good words to live by. Michael Stern has been the guest. Lucille Ball's number one fan, the book I Had a Ball, His Life and Times with Lucille Ball. Michael, we'll have to have you back because I think we're just scratching the surface here, but this has been a lot of fun remembering the later years of certainly the queen of television as she remains, Lucille Ball. Thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. And next time we will talk again.
Perfect. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Michael Stern, Lucille Ball's number one fan. Voice of a People with Linda Sims comes up next. Adam the Computer Guy at 12:15 for this day. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Oh,
that's right, Marlo.
They keep calling me Marlo sometimes. I say, no, that's Marlo Thomas. I said, Marlo has...